Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. How many quarterbacks are going in the first round of the NFL draft? Coming up on Inside Coverage, I'll ask Nate Tice from Football 301. He has his new mock out with Charles McDonald. Also, the players Nate is most interested in seeing in person next week in Indianapolis. Plus, Matt Miller from ESPN will tell you there are not as many blue chippers in this first round as you think. Inside Coverage is next. It is another off-season edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo, the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. And I'm fairly certain this is the first time on yahoosports.tv, if that's how you're watching us, and I thank you, that anyone has done a podcast in a pinstripe suit. But I'm running to the studio being like, you know, a dressing room here at NBC, to do this pod because I need to, I want to. I'm looking forward to, like, it's making my week, my year, to talk to Nate Tice, of course, from Football 301. And I'm like, Nate, I was going to change into a T-shirt, make myself look respectable. But here I am, dude. I'm in a pinstripe suit, not making it about me, but I feel like you're dressed for the job and I am not.
I'm dressed for the job. I think I might be even overdressed compared to my own standards. So you're several tiers better than that. I know you're so excited to do a pod in the middle of the Olympics that you break out the suit, drop everything.
I am excited. Yeah,
of course. And I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me.
Dude, no, I appreciate you.
You even asked me what you want to talk about. I said D, all the above, because that's how excited I was.
Yeah, you got a day job. You got your own pod. You got Football 301. You got a new mock draft out with Charles McDonald, which we're going to dive into in a little bit. And we're all going to be on a roadshow next week at the Combine. Nate, are you ready, in all seriousness, for the week, the Bud Light, you know, light beer and bourbon and overcooked steak and late night and all of that convention that is Indianapolis?
I am, and I'm also like, I'm glad you said the burnt steak, because no offense to the lovely places in Indianapolis, which is a great city, and it is underrated city, I will say that. But those steak places are just fine. I almost prefer the Roost Chris there to several of the Indianapolis joints there.
really?
I'm a sucker for, I'm sucker for the over-buttered, sizzling steak, and it's not just Roost Chris, there's other places that do that as well. It's not the only type of steak I like, but the other ones there, I think are good. I don't know, but I St. Elmo's, you have to do the shrimp cocktail, but it's also, you do it. Course, I'd prefer to go to Harry and Izzy's next door. Just kind of like, I like
the setup there. It's the same kitchen, you realize. You know, it's the same kitchen?
Yeah, same kitchen. Same, like, quasi-menu, right? Like, there's a lot of shared stuff, right?
Yeah, it totally is. And for anyone who wants to come say hi, I have a Monday tradition. I sit down with a couple of buddies. I sit at the bar. Not that anybody should come, like rearrange your schedule. But every Monday at the Combine, me and my buddies always kind of get back together. It's like a reunion, which is what the entire week is for a lot of people. It's a reunion and sit at the bar and sit at Elmo's. But if you want to go down this road, I am the guy that cannot stand the buttered steak. Like, nothing is worse than the, you go to a steakhouse, whichever one, no names, and they bring you your steak and it's a stick of butter that they also put a steak with. And I'm like, no, like, I want to taste the steak. I don't want to taste a stick of butter.
And so me saying I love the sizzling butter and smell and everything was just like, you're like, oh no. And it's not that I hate the other steaks. It's just more, it is a preference over the years when you have the same. That's the thing too, is you get worn down because you want to see everybody. So you do dinners and then everybody wants to do a steak night. And so you're just like, by night four, and you're just like, okay, I love steak, but I can't do another 18 ounces. Like, I gotta change it up. And I think that maybe wears me down over time. It's funny, you have your traditions. I have mine too. Mine are more bar oriented, but still it is part of the tradition. I love sitting at Tin Roof, which is across from, of course,
great
the legendary Prime 47. And I kind of, it's great people watching. And it's also sometimes you get some great live music. But also, you know, there's some places around there. I also stay at not the usual haunts that most people stay, which is also a thing I like about the Combine, because I have my like little area in the middle. It's a very centrally located for a centrally located city in the country. Yeah, I feel it's very fitting. I'm not going to tell you which one. Maybe you off air. But I'm not going to tell anyone on air. I know a lot of people really care about that.
It's really a dance. It's really a dance, because you'll inevitably read, like, there'll be a big trade, right? Or some team will draft somebody you didn't see coming. And then the long form piece about how this decision was made will always go back and include some kind of something like the two general managers met away from the hustle and bustle of downtown Indianapolis at a whatever restaurant 7 miles outside of town, so they wouldn't be noticed. There are some really good restaurants in Indianapolis. Yeah, like if I go to the Eater app, and like a lot of teams do this as well. Like, get out of the steakhouse mosh pit, and go see the rest of the city.
No, there are some great ones. Yeah, like you said, and you almost nailed it. Like the distance too. They're all like 12 to 14 minutes away. And there's also even, there's some nice cafe type places in downtown Indy, even in that area, that I also love, that aren't the usual haunts that some of the guys stop at. And I also kind of just like that. It's more towards the arena and stuff. But yeah, no, there's actually, it's a great food town. It is, more outside the steaks. And I'm a steak guy. That's the thing. Now I feel like I'm a hater.
Me too.
Just hate everything. I just hate meat all of a sudden. You know, I just feel like a herbivore.
You just can't do it every night. I mean, like, anyway, let's move on. Nate Tice, Football 301. But I should also mention that Matt Miller, ESPN draft guy, is coming up in about 25 minutes, so he'll join the show as well. He has a mock draft. And Nate, you and C-Mac, as I mentioned, have a mock draft as well. No surprise, you have Fernando Mendoza going number one overall to the Raiders. Is there any scenario in your world in which they say, you know what, let's go spend money on Malik Willis or make some other quarterback move and say, we are willing to put this pick up for auction and move out?
I think they just do the Occam's razor, which is the answer, which is just take the quarterback that's available, the kind of consensus, unanimous, really only quarterback that's truly locked in and looked at as a first rounder by everybody. And I think Mendoza, you know, that high floor tag he's getting is kind of doing him a disservice of how he actually is. I think there's more to tap into, you know, still being a young man at 22, but also just he has more tools than maybe he's getting credit for. I've said this on many of shows now, but I think the high-end comparison which we have here is Matt Ryan, which is a guy that went to several Pro Bowls, won an MVP, of course, but was always playing as a guy that you not only can win with, but you win because of. Maybe it's not that tier one guy, but tier two is something that you would love to have at 1-1 as a quarterback. You take in the top 10 at the very least. So Mendoza also has that floor where he operates on third down in 2 minute situations where it's like real quarterback play. So I'm saying all that too, is that getting a guy that I think can, you know, hit the ground, I wouldn't say running, but at least jogging in the NFL to at least be a nice solid starter. You can take advantage of his rookie contract, which is also the other positives. The cap's going up. It's going to go up, it feels like, forever. Wait until we get to those streaming rights. And I think, too, isn't maybe as much of a, there's this new middle class that's developed with the quarterback contracts. It was either kind of high-end or rookie deal. Now there's the Sam Darnold deals, the Geno Smith deals of the last few years that you can kind of look at. But I still think the rookie contract is something that's nice, because you're not only just thinking about 2026. The Raiders shouldn't be thinking just about 2026. This is about 2027, 2028, 2029. That is where you can build, maybe catch the Chiefs as they're on a downslope, catch the Broncos when they maybe have to make a Bo Nix decision and pay him, you know, catch the Chargers, same exact kind of thing. And that's where you want to be on the upslope. So there's other ramifications of being drafting a rookie, but I also think Mendoza is a 1-1 type of player, and it's 1-1 type of prospect that you should be more than happy to take. And I think his personality is kind of perfect for what the Raiders need.
You like the Kubiak fit?
I love it. As I've marinated it much more, I like it, because again, the comparisons are Matt Ryan, Goff a little bit. Those are kind of the general comparisons for him. He throws well in the move. He's willing to throw over the middle. That's exactly what you want in the Shanahan offense. a Shanahan Kubiak offense, I should say. And I think he's just a, he has to, you know, work on some stuff under center and stuff, but it's not like he's never, ever done it. It's just really in college, they did a lot of RPOs and they were in the gun. But I do think that kind of offensive fit is perfect for how he plays and wants to play. So yeah, I really like it. And also like the personnel for that Kubiak offense, Brock Bowers, Ashton Jeanty, even Trey Tucker as a deep threat guy. It kind of is nice to have in that kind of offense, and they can lift the floor of an offensive line that was pretty porous last year. But maybe that, you know, getting them all on the same page will help them maybe be more average-ish, kind of lift it all up.
I should point out, it, obviously, that you could find Nate and C-Max mock draft on the Yahoo NFL webpage. I should also point out that you did the odds and C-Max did the evens, right?
Yes. Yes. But we do talk about it. We kind of just check with each other. We're good. Okay. We'll go from there.
Okay. So I realize now that I'm asking you to defend one of his picks. We're not going all the way down to 24 yet, where he has Ty Simpson go to the Browns. But at two, the consensus, the groupthink, and I'm anti-groupthink. It is way too early. April 23rd is a long way away. The groupthink is Arvell Reese here. You guys, parentheses, C-Mac, have Reuben Bain going two to the Jets. Yeah. Why?
It was more a true edge defender, I should say, with inside versatility. But as opposed to Reese, who the glass half empty look at him or more pessimistic look is he an off ball linebacker? Is he an edge player? I think you have to look at Reese as a maybe if you watch the Eagles, how Zach Bond is used, which isn't, it's not a one to one comparison about what their skills and traits are, but it's just more of a play style similarity where most of the snaps are on the ball, but then he can align as an edge player, as an outside linebacker type, as they change the fronts. So maybe that is where you can see, oh, is he just good at a couple things, as opposed to Bain, who plays the run really well, plays the pass really well. I've compared him to Brandon Graham, as kind of a stylistic comparison and size comparison, where you just maybe just can know what he is. And for a team like the Jets that kind of need players after they traded everybody away, maybe that was kind of the argument that we had. And Bain is just one of those players that you look at, you're like, this guy's going to be useful no matter what. And the Jets could use a lot of useful on that roster right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. And you have Reese going four, by the way, to the Titans, which is not exactly a precipitous fall. I mean, that's totally within the realm of possibility here for a guy who has a kind of talent and has a little bit of flexibility. Can you put him on the edge and make him a full-time pass rusher? Yeah, probably. And you got Caleb Downs sitting there at five. A little rich for a safety, but he is that good. You have Spencer Fano getting to the Browns at six, which honestly makes my heart happy. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you look at what that offensive line situation is with the Browns. I think offensive line is going to get addressed at some point in this draft and maybe several times in this draft by the Browns. And that offensive tackle one, however you want to look at it, or even O lineman one, is up in the air still. And not to say that Fanau is a bad player, it's just that there's a lot of interesting candidates at offensive line in this draft. I also like Caleb Lomu, his teammate that plays left tackle at Utah. I actually have him ranked a tad bit higher just because I think of his pass protection versatility. But that's the thing. They're all ranked similarly. Like, they're all in the same kind of tier. It's just more of eye the beholder and maybe see how they test this next week and interview and how medicals are, et cetera, the combine roulette. But also just there's other interesting candidates at offensive line that I can maybe rise these next couple of weeks that I include, you know, ones that I'm fan of too. Like, that I can't wait to watch how they test, yada, yada, and see how they go up.
I promise I'm not cheating on you guys with Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, but he's a friend, right? And so I was looking at his.
Oh, yes. Love DJ.
Yeah, I mean, DJ's the best. You guys have David Bailey, 7 to the Commanders, which, yes, I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. Would it stun you if Bailey goes before Reese and Bain?
It would stun me a little bit, but I can see the argument. Mentioned that getting after the passers, everything. It's going to be a passing league, even if the NFL is running a little bit more, at least kind of just how defenses are playing. But I think with Bailey, why that's a little rich for me is just that against the run, he's iffy. It's a lack of size, you know, a lack of, I wouldn't even say a lack of want to. He plays very hard. It's just that if you have limitations in one aspect of the game, I only can rise you so high. And that's actually kind of where Washington is. That's kind of how I think I'm going to get with Bailey. But that's not to say he's an incredible pass rusher. And that that's why you can justify a guy that's iffy against the run, because when they pass the ball, that's the name of the game. Guys get paid for sacks. So if you get that, and if you get a 10 sack guy, that is, you know, generally worth it, unless they're a true negative in the run game. And that's what the question marks are to me. But I mean, obviously DJ is tapped in. There's others that have talked about this. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if teams fall in love with Bailey. His underlying stats are good. He plays hard. He seems like a good guy. Also, he's probably going to test very well. If he does test, that's the caveat now, because he's just such a great athlete and so explosive. He's a little raw with his pass rushing moves. Not to say that like he doesn't have any, but he can be a little loose with those and maybe has to learn to kind of play within the scheme. Or usually those guys in the NFL, it's kind of like you have to earn that right to kind of have some looseness to your pass rusher. Sure. But it's about traits and explosiveness, and he has that.
Looking at Nate Tice and Charles McDonald's mock drafter, Football 301, by the way, they'll break the whole thing down there. You have Jeremiah Love going to the Chiefs. We're going to talk about him with Matt Miller coming up in a second. But from your perspective, knowing the way running back contracts go, why is Jeremiah – look, turn on the tape. The guy's unbelievable,
yeah,
right? Like, watch any Notre Dame game last year. You get it. But why do you think he is so special that he's worth a top 10 pick?
He can play every down, which is why you have – again, talking about, like, snaps impacted. Just talked about that with Bailey. But for the running back, is that can you receive the ball or be used as a receiver? And also, can you pass block and pass protect? So he can do that. And that's – and do you have the size to withstand touches? Because that's another thing. We can't have a limitation in that regard if I'm going to take you in the top 10. That's how I view it. Anyways, some people, there's always exceptions. You know, Tavon Austin went in the top 10. But so looking at Love, though, is he checks that for me. He can take any run to the house analytically. He's great. He checks all the benchmarks there. It's not like he was an inefficient touch type of guy, you know, just or a guy that didn't actually have explosives when he looked at it at a rate sense. He is just one of these players, too, that you look around the league, I don't think you're seeing that. It's not that running backs don't matter. And I know that's been kind of like a joke or a meme. It's that the running back floor has been lifted so high as players became better receivers at the running back position, as running backs just became better. So there's just the difference between the average running back, the replacement level running back, and one that was good. Didn't get the gap wasn't as big as other positions. Tackle. I mean, the guy between good and average is a giant, you know, giant gap. It's now that we're seeing, though, is if you can impact more plays and actually, you know, if defenses are going to dare us to run the ball, well, now we got to turn these 5 yard gains into 15 yard gains. And we need a guy that can do that. And you watch the Falcons. I don't think they regret Bijan Robinson. I look at Jahmyr Gibbs with the Lions. Genty was a little too rich for me with the Raiders because of their makeup last year. But I bet you this year they're going to be pretty happy about it. And in the future. But I say the same with Love. He can play all four downs. He can do everything you need him to do. But also he can take the rock to the house. And that's what the name of the game is. We think of passing explosives, but rushing explosives too.
So going down the list here, I'm not going to do every single pick, but the one that kind of, well, there's a lot that stood out. Obviously, it's a mock. It's early. You guys have Kenyon Sadiq a little bit lower than maybe where some people have him, but I get it. Like, you put him on, he's an explosive player. At the same time, he's not your massive prototypical tight end that, say, you saw last year with Colston Loveland or Tyler Warren. He's a different guy. I don't know that he's Harold Fannin, who went in the third round, but what are your thoughts on his size and how he projects and the kind of system he needs to be?
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is that sometimes with these young guys you're projecting, and this is all sports, you're looking at their frame, you're looking at how young they are, whether they can grow into it. And this is a knock on Sadiq, but also a compliment, is that he's kind of maxed out, and that's because he works so hard, but he's kind of maxed out. Like, so it is, how much am I going to tap into as far as frame wise? I mean, just looking at him on the picture right here on a YouTube show. But he's yoked, but it's very tight. But that is to say that he is going to have some, again, talk about snaps impacted. He's going to have some limitations playing in line, and it's not because of want to. He actually is a tenacious blocker. It's just that physics. he's only going to be able to get so big, and he's going to go against guys that are just physically bigger. So there's going to just be some limitations blocking. That is not to say that he'll be a bad blocker. It's just that he has to be used in certain ways. He can't be used how Colson Loveland was used for the Bears last year, truly in line. But that's not, he's very explosive. You really got to see him add some vertical. He's great in yak situations, you know, underneath, but you also got to see him attack vertically throughout the season. The Rutgers game stands out to me. You know, attacking down the seam, attacking down the sideline. That's how tight ends got to be used these days. He's, I would say his hands can be a little iffy sometimes. He has some concentration drops, but it's not an overlying issue. Because if you can create explosives, I can deal with a couple drops. But he plays to a style that is like, this guy, again, explosives are why you want, or it's what you want from a skill player. He can win from the slot and split out and also be used as a valid blocker. So that's the thing, is if you're a receiving tight end, you have to be able to block something and you have to be able to beat a safety or a slot corner. And he can do that. And that's why he's pretty exciting. He kind of, in the weirdest way, is like Dalton Schultz with the Texans, but souped up.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I view him. Like a very like plus version of Dalton Schultz. That is my comparison for Kenyon Sadiq, as far as just size and limitations, but also the good aspects of him.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I did an Oregon game 2 years ago. I'm losing track. And it was like, hey, you got to look at this guy. And you're like, wait, the guy from the state of Idaho? You're like, yes, him. and he is that guy. Now, granted, there's crazy depth there. And like the next guy coming through Oregon at tight end, keep an eye on him as well. But Kenyon Sadiq, you have going number 31 overall. All right, so that's your mock draft. It's you and Charles McDonald right now on Yahoo's NFL page. And also, obviously, you guys talking about it on Football 301. Coming up, you, as we get ready for the combine here, have a list of guys. I know it's kind of a cliche, but it is a fact. Can get to Indianapolis and really help themselves out, not only in the meetings, but in their workouts as well. Players to watch at the combine with Nate Tice. It is Inside Coverage on Yahoo. That's coming up next. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. We're taking the show on the road next week at the combine, doing a bunch of shows there as every coach speaks, every GM speaks, and unless you're the Rams, pretty much the entire coaching staff for most teams will be there. Nate Tice will be there as well from Football 301. Check out his mock draft with Charles McDonald right now on the Yahoo NFL page. Also, Nate, you're about to drop a list of the quote-unquote prospects to watch. Everyone that calls himself a draft analyst is asked by their editor to give us a list of guys you are keeping an eye on. A little inside baseball there, but it's just how the sausage is made as I mix metaphors. You have your list of guys to keep an eye on. Either they could make a move, meaning they could impress, and maybe you think more of them now than you did when the regular season ended. Maybe you're curious about a hand size, a measurement, a physical. Are they recovered from an injury? Maybe it's, are you curious how they're going to do in meetings? Like, how are they when you put them on the board? How do they come across? There's been some off-field stuff. How do they answer those questions when they sit down with teams? All those things. So let's go down the list. There are a lot of people that have Monroe Freeling, the Georgia offensive tackle, going in the first round. What are you looking to see or hear from him?
I want to see how he tests, because if he puts on a show and actually comes in with great size, what I think he has, you know, he has a basketball background. But also if he tests like a freak, that is just only going to make his stock rise. He was a big riser for me in the second half of the year. I went in more detail on him on Football 301 last week, where he cropped up into my, you know, my kind of unofficial top 30, I would say, before it was published. And then when we did a mock, he kind of just keeps rising, kind of seeing others kind of feeling the same way as well. But just a real, real great athlete. Long, again, I mentioned the basketball background, but as opposed to like most basketball players, actually like has developed some strength and some core strength, which is always the issue. You know, maybe has to pack more lower body weight and core strength. And you can see it show up with his anchor. You can see it show up with his hand usage. But he's a guy that if he tests very well, interviews well as well, but interviews with teams well, then you could see him rising. Because I think offensive line coaches, if you watch the second half of the year, especially the last month, when he got playing big games, you got to see exactly what Freeling has become. Because September football with him was not great. You're like, oh yeah, maybe another year. And you could like, but the last month you could see why he declared. And I think if he puts on a show next week, then he's only going to rise even into the top 20. And he might end up there on my next big board anyways.
And he's only a one-year starter, really a left tackle. Started a little bit in 2024 at left tackle, got in there. And he's a basketball player, as you said. He is a legit 6'7". I'm fascinated to see how he actually, you know, what the height is when he actually measures. Nate, from your offensive line background, is there such a thing as too tall for a tackle?
Yes and no, because then you think of Jonathan Ogden, Brian McKinney, even they can get it. You just have to be athletic enough. Joe Alt, yes, all of 6'8". I think he was officially 6'8". But there's it's athleticism more than anything. That's really what you're looking at. It's footwork, balance. Like one of the things that you look at, like, is some guys are too tall and too, you know, linear. As far as like they don't have that kind of base, that platform to work off of. Like, I think if you think really tall guys that don't feel like you don't feel their tallness is guys like that have the wide base and actually the thick legs. Think of the Orlando Brown senior and junior. I think is a good example of that. I mean, his nickname was freaking Zeus. And so I think too is that they have to kind of show how the athleticism kind of presents itself. Like if the guy's on the ground all the time, then yeah, he is too tall. Like or they're too linear. Like I said, that's one of my issues with Fano from Utah, is whether he can pack on more base to kind of keep him balanced against better NFL athletes. He's super powerful, don't get me wrong, but it's just something one of my concerns I have with him. But yeah, it's too tall sometimes, but it's just more about the base that they play with. Quarterback maybe is a fun question for that though, about too tall for quarterbacks, because Dan McGuire, amongst others, God, dude, over the years.
I was literally about to say Dan McGuire. Like, yeah.
Infamously.
6'10", right? Wasn't it officially 6'10"?
Yeah, all of 6'9 at the combine and like got listed at that.
I'm Googling right now. Yeah, keep talking. Dan McGuire.
I think my dad played with him in Seattle. That's why I always know that. Byron Leftwich had a story that when he was at get measured by either, you know, the trainer or whatever, either the combine or his pro day, he knew about the stereotype about 6'6 quarterbacks. And so he shrunk himself just like a quarter inch, and they like measured him at 6'5 and 6'8" because he didn't want to get the 6'6 label. Which is, you know, Justin Herbert's 6'6". There's some guys now that are kind of breaking it a little bit. Trevor Lawrence feels like he's 6'6 as well. But those guys are so athletic. So maybe they're breaking it a little bit.
It's a little bit of a different era. So according to Pro Football Reference, he's 6'8". 6'10 is absurd. I don't know why I said 6'10". But as a kid, I remember when he came out, that was like, you know, he's so tall. And I just have in my head that he was 6'10". He clearly was not 6'10", but 6'8". I mean,
6'10 with a helmet
is a huge dude. With the 6'10", what was something like 6'10 with the afro, Fletch. Although he didn't have Fletch. One. I have never, for the record, been accused of being too tall. Like, I've never had to shrink myself at measurement, so I have no idea what Dan McGuire obviously had to go through. But yeah, there's that. Also on your list of guys you're curious to see is Mansoor Delane, the corner. It's a pretty good corner draft. Played at two, I don't say DB factories, LSU maybe more than Virginia Tech, but Tech in the past has certainly cranked out plenty of DBs. Right. What do you need to see from him?
Generally all from one family too, like the Fullers. But no, there's some other guys too. From him, it's more just what he tests. Again, another guy I want to see the testing, which is always a concern now because so many guys just wait till their pro day, because I think he is a high IQ player and a player. I mean, he has some twitch and some looseness to how he plays. I really, really like him. It's just that, does he have that high-end athleticism or is it just more good? And you would say that's splitting hairs, but if you're taking a guy, that's a big difference between taking a guy top 8 and taking a guy 18 or 28. So that's where you got to just look at, because if you're taking corner, you want the elite athletes, and every kind of elite corner tested like an elite athlete. You know, there's some exceptions as always, but that's kind of the general rule. So, but just for that, if he is, he's battling for cornerback one already, and some people may have him that as already, but if he tests like a very good athlete or better, then he rises even more on the consensus big boards, on my big board, because, and he's battling for that CB1 shot or CB1 spot and just locked in as the CB1 throughout this process. So he can kind of solidify kind of his rise throughout the throughout this year. Just a really fun, smart player. I no matter what, I feel like he's going to be a good pro, but it's more just, are you good just in zone? Or are you good in zone, man, can run anything and you're scheme proof? Because this guy is just so smart, has enough length too. So I want to just see kind of, I do want to see with the length, because that's always the thing too. But just want to see how he measures in athletically, because then I can see what his actual ceiling is as a corner.
You and C-Mac have him going 10 overall to the Bengals. Last year, they took a height, weight, speed guy, Shamar Stewart, with no production. Yes.
Absolutely no production. Was it, what was it, half a sack?
None.
It was in the worst landing spot possible. Like, yeah.
And it was like, oh, and guess what? And guess how we did this year. A&M. He's Miles Garrett. He's an athlete. He's a freak. Right. And then obviously the whole thing where he held out and said what he said. And yeah, I mean, whatever.
It was one of those, he played so much football and he was like missing the football completely. Like any play fake completely got him. And that was my concern with him. It was like, I get he's a good athlete. And I get that, like, okay, look at that one flash play. But this guy's played like a lot of football at a lot of big programs in high school and college, and he hasn't just learned the game. And that's like, whoop, big alarm bell for me. So thank you for letting me talk about Shamar Stewart, because that's how he played as a rookie too, which is not ideal. But we digress.
Yeah, look, he was a right. He was a polarizing pick, and obviously Bengal fans went defense, 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 and they just want one of the blue chip defensive guys to fall to them at 10, whomever it is. They would love Caleb Downs from, you know, right up the road. They would love whomever, at least the Bengals fans in my life that keep telling me this. You know, there's the running joke that I always tell them as well, that, you know, Duke Tobin and Mike Brown are the very small scouting staff, although Duke defended that a couple of weeks ago at the end of the season presser. They're just going to take, as it's my joke, and blame me if you don't like it, Bengals fans, that Mike Brown always wants to take whatever big school guy that he watched on TV at 3:30 Eastern time in that big ABC or CBS window, right? Let's take that guy.
Yep.
Delane would fit Power that bill. Maybe not. Yeah. And Shamar Stewart certainly fit that bill as well, but they need pieces on defense. We do agree. I have not seen a single mock that has the Bengals taking anyone other than defense at 10.
Yeah. And they actually might get it. They're nice kind of pick of the litter at 10. I kind of feel like this draft is kind of the nice range of starting in that kind of 8 to 16, 8 to 18 sweet spot, because it's just where you kind of like let other people make mistakes and let some of these other guys fall to you. So I think him, or I mean, they could get Bane fall to them, which I think would be a great, because that's the antithesis of Shamar Stewart, and someone that's like, okay, this guy has production and like actually just plays gritty football. So like, that's an ideal guy to me, because then it's like, all right, we can't screw this one up. Right. I mean, I say jokingly, but also say it seriously, kind of like a hedge against your own kind of maybe development.
Talking to Nate Tice here, Football 301. Guys, he's looking forward to seeing next week when we get to the combine. I don't know if he's on your list or not, but he's on mine. Caden Proctor, how big is he? I'm, Nate, going to be fascinated to see when he steps on the scale what that says.
No, I definitely. Charles and I on the show last week, we kind of like talk about devolved our conversation into me looking at Pro Football Reference for offensive lineman that weighed over 360 pounds and then 370 pounds.
DeJuan
as well.
Jones, one of them.
DeJuan Jones was on there. 360 was a little more encouraging. 370 was scary, because 370 was like, oh man, now I'm blanking on his name. He was a tackle that played for the Lions and Wisconsin. I should know his name. Oh, Aaron Gibson.
Zach Banner also was a big dude from SC.
That I don't know if Zach Banner was on there. Now I want to look again. And Stone's
no,
like,
he wasn't
not
that
again.
Big. Zach's not that big. No. I take that back. Zach and I were just texting last week. He's not that big. But
once you got the 360, it was a little more encouraging. It was like Brian McKinney, actually the Orlando Browns that we talked about just a second ago.
Sure.
No, and so that was like a little more encouraging, but there's a lot of misses once you get to that weight, because it's just one of those things where if you're already having trouble with it, like in college at a big program, like what's going to happen in the NFL. And yeah, there's a lot of NFL players with discipline, but you see a lot of guys still go to their worst habits when they're outside, you know, have more stuff that they're in charge of. So that, you know, those are just concerns I have. And also that's how he plays sometimes. In pass protection, he can be a little slow footed, but he can be, having said all that, can't teach size. And once he gets his hands on you, it's game over. And it's just absolute road grading off, you know, down the side. I just think you just have to cap kind of how high you would take him, but he's a perfect guy, man, in late 20s, mid 20s, kind of that range. But again, this is going to depend on how he weighs in at, because that's going to be actually just, that is going to be a big thing, pun intended.
Yeah, it's going to be a big thing. And listen, not trying to shame the guy. It's going to be a big thing your entire career. It's just, it's just the way it is. Look at J.C. Latham. It's still a thing there in Tennessee for him. And he was a first round pick as well. They got to move him around. It is absolutely a thing. Yep. Yeah. So it's going to be fascinating to see what he actually weighs in. And hand size. Let's talk that, because Garrett Nussmeier, hand size might be a thing. Also not the tallest quarterback. And for me, he's kind of, Nate, the under the radar guy. A year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, so during the 2024 season, it's, oh yeah, Garrett Nussmeier is the guy. To me, and tell me if I'm wrong, he's kind of the quarterback that people are sleeping on. And obviously the season went sideways this year for Brian Kelly and for LSU. He threw some YOLO balls, took some risks, but he's got something to him. Is he the don't forget about me sneaky small hand quarterback that might be, you know, a surprise day one guy?
I don't know about day one, but he could be QB2 still, if that makes sense. If that in the sense where he might be going round two or something, but he could be QB2. And he's mine as of right now. I have to kind of just, quarterbacks take me a while because I try to watch a lot of games, and I've watched a lot of Nuss. I was firmly on the Nuss bus last year in 2024 season, I should say. I had him battling with Cam Ward for QB1 at my midseason big board. Like, they were 1-2 for me tight. He's one of these guys I've joked around with, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, where we've talked about him this summer, and he's a guy that I'm a guy that really looks at traits at all positions, but even especially quarterback. And I look at hand size. I look at weight even more than height. And I think athletic thresholds have to be there as well. That's more film study than anything. But when I watch him, he's a guy that Dane and I were talking about. It's like, oh, he's only 6 feet tall. He's fine. He's fine. He's 202 pounds. He's fine. He's fine. He's fine. His hands are tiny. No, he's fine, because why I wave all those away is because he's so much fun to watch. When he battled a lot of injuries this year, LSU's offensive line was battered. The receivers were not good. We saw, you already mentioned Brian Kelly, but he's a guy that plays with a style that you have to play with to at least win games. Not just the, pun intended, not just to drive the bus or be a rider or a passenger on the bus, but the guy to actually win you a game in 2 minutes. Does that get him trouble sometimes? Yes. And you can see it get him trouble. And I thought this year he pressed a little bit, but he also got banged up this year. But we saw him at the Senior Bowl really show out and be a guy that truly understands an NFL offense as a coach's kid. But you can see he has an understanding of how to be aggressive, when to push the ball and try some stuff. So he is maxed out in the sense that that's what his size is. He's old as well as a prospect. But in this year's class, he at least plays a style that's a little more interesting than some backups that you, or high-end backups, or as a, it's kind of a great thing. I look at him as kind of like a high-end backup floor, a guy that could be a kind of a midline starter. And that's what I usually group into my middle day two guys. I always just say he's round three guys. But to me, he's kind of the top of that class. And the guy that he's competing with, Ty Simpson, kind of has some similar issues as Nussmeier as far as size, as far as getting injured this year as well. He has some accuracy sprays. I think Nussmeier is a little more accurate. But it's kind of the same concerns with those kind of guys that could be battling for QB2.
But you know how this goes. We've seen this movie 1,000 times before, that if you're QB2 with, say, a second or third round grade, you're going to get pushed up because there's scarcity, especially this year. And it's like, well, like, why take him in the second? I'll just take him in the first if I'm not going to get him. I'm not saying he's going to go in the first, but you know how this whole thing works.
Yeah. Happened with Jackson Dart last year. Happened with, exactly. I mean, Yeah. I mean, that's a guy that I can, I mean, everyone I talked to in my own grades, I was like, I look at this guy as like a round three guy. And I'm like, am I being mean? A lot of people are like, no, same.
So, yeah, but he ends up going around one. There aren't a lot of round two and round three quarterbacks. They all just get pushed up. Now, there are exceptions like Malik Willis. There were a lot of concerns. Yeah. He at one point was projected around the Senior Bowl, projected. People were like, oh, this guy's going to go in the first, even though he barely played. And then he played at Liberty. Well, then he fell to the third. And then you see, obviously, the way that movie has played out. And he's the bell of the ball in free agency. But yeah, second or third round quarterbacks, like, what are you? Well, you're probably quarterbacks to get into the bottom half of the first round.
That's how it goes. I call it the quarterback inflation. Because that's where, and for me, a guy that I would consider a top 50 guy, which I think these guys are, they're on the fringe of that. Like, I still consider them more like 60 or 70 range, that those guys, that's well within range. Like, it's a half round inflation at the very least. If it's an around early round two guy, oh yeah, that guy's going top 20. I mean, the 2024 draft, which was, yeah, a bunch of quarterbacks went early. Should they have? and I understand that, like, you know, guys like Penix, like, hey, he was graded like a round two, round three guy for a reason, guys. And even McCarthy, I had as a round two guy. And you see, but that's just how it goes. And it's just funny, whether you want to retcon, reverse, kind of look back at, you know, revisionist history, I should say, it is kind of funny. Just always just that everyone kind of shrugs and goes, yeah, everyone wants to take you. If you, because you hit, the rewards are so great. And I get that. But it's just very funny how we kind of revisionist history sometimes where the guys actually go.
It's also an interesting draft. And there aren't a lot of blue chip guys, obviously. There are, but like it's not the deepest of all drafts. We're going to talk about that with Matt coming up in a bit. There's a dearth of quarterbacks, and there's all eyes on next year for the quarterbacks. So you have teams, I guarantee you, that are already sitting in meetings going, hey, if we can move out and get an extra number one for next year, like if somebody really wants to come out and come up, we're going to listen. And because of the dearth of quarterbacks, if you really do need one, you might be willing to overpay to go up and get that guy. If you're really desperate and teams are going to be listening because they probably want to get out for next year.
And I look at, and everyone always does this, but this one, I promise it's true. This next year's class has the guys. I like that line of thinking.
And we said that last year about this year, and now we're really punting to next year. But next year, we mean it.
I mean it. I swear this time. I swear. I promise this time. Santa is real. I really do think that. if you, Arch Manning, man, is going to be, people just, it's kind of perfect how it's all played out, where he got the early hype, everyone sold all their shares, and then if you've watched him in the second half of the year, you go, oh yeah, this is why this guy got so hyped up and he's incredible. But then there's others, there's so many cool players next year. By the dip. Him and Lenore Sellers I'm high on still. I mean, Dante Moore, there's a lot of guys that are super interesting. Even a guy like, this is the difference, Trinidad Chambliss was battling for QB2 for me. And he, right now, as I just said, it's February, but, you know, I haven't done my next year's big board, but off the top of my head, he's like QB5 for me for next year. And I feel pretty confident in saying that. So it's like, he's battling for two this year. He's QB5 pretty easily. And that's before I even really marinate on that. It might be QB7 when I'm all said and done, like going through this process. I'd even think of Byron Brown from Auburn, another guy I like. He throws funky, but I like him.
You know what? We got through this pod without hitting on the fact, and we're not going to. I'm going to drive people to Football 301 for the conversation and drive people to read the article. But we're not even hitting the fact that C-Mac has the Browns taking Ty Simpson at 24.
We're
not going there. We're not going there. We suggest you listen to that conversation on Football 301. Dude, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you for giving me a respite from to put my football brain back in here. Safe travels to Indianapolis.
Appreciate it.
And look forward to raising the glass there.
Yeah, I'll see you at Harry and Izzy's maybe. But no, great seeing you, Andrew.
Fantastic.
I've been enjoying all your coverage, man. Go USA.
Yeah, go Team USA, which as we record this, just won in overtime to beat Sweden.
Huge.
To move on to the semifinals in men's hockey. The women are in the final coming up on Thursday, battling Canada. All right. That's Nate Tice, everybody. Football 301. Check it out. Coming up next, Matt Miller from ESPN. Just how many blue chippers does he have? Like legit first round grades in this draft? We'll ask him straight ahead. He is a man of many hats. However, most importantly, what it says on the business card, if people still have business cards these days, is NFL draft analyst and insider for ESPN. The great Matt Miller joins us now on Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's always good to see you. Looking forward to our annual combine hangout. But it's great to have the dust knocked off of us for draft season. We all of us analysts get to climb out of our caves and actually see other human beings. So it's a good time of year.
It's the most important time of the year for the entire industry, you being a massive part of that industry. How do you get ready, by the way, for Indy? Do you go, hey, I can't eat a steak or drink brown liquor for a month just to get ready for the next 10 days?
No, I'm Midwestern. That's every day for me is steak and brown liquor. So no, I'm my body stays primed for prime in Indianapolis. I'm ready for St. Elmo's. So no problems here. The voice is the biggest issue, as you know, which caffeine right. and alcohol are not great for the voice overall, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. That's why tell everybody don't go out till 4 a.m. on Tuesday night.
No, you gotta pace yourself.
Save that for later.
You got to pace yourself. That is a pro right there, Matt Miller. You have your mock right now on ESPN.com. But before I hit that, I want to get something else you printed or you posted, which is first round grades versus where teams or players go in mocks. There's a big difference, obviously. There are players over the years, you go, oh, well, he was a first round pick. You're like, yeah, but it was not the best draft. We didn't have a first round grade on him. You have 11 players with a first round grade. Where is that in terms of years past?
It's low. This is probably the lowest that I've had. You know, I started at Bleacher Report in 2011, was my first draft there. This will be the fewest number of first round grades that I've had on a class. And so I hope that changes. I do hope that we get to Indianapolis and we look at a class and I say, you know what, Vega Ione from Penn State, that's a true first rounder. Maybe he's the best pure offensive lineman in this class. I could see him elevating up. I think the hope is that we don't have anyone fall down because of medicals, because of injury issues. Jordan Tyson from Arizona State, the wide receiver, is right there on the line for me as a potential first rounder. And the reason he's not is because of medicals. And so I think that's the key for Indy, is finding out which guys are we more comfortable with than we thought we were, right? And my hope would be, you know, normally in a class, you're at about 15 or 16 players. There have been years where I've thought there was 18 to 20. So this year is a little bit light, but I wouldn't be surprised if once more information is available on the class that we do see a little bit more than 11. I don't think it'll ever be a 15 player class, but I do think it could be 12 to 13.
All right. And the obvious thing here is everyone's looking to 2027, not only for the quarterbacks, but big picture here. Most people agree or think, at least for now, and a lot can change. April 23rd is a long way away, that next year's draft is better than this year's draft. But this year's draft, you have to pick players. And obviously, you got to build teams. And there will undoubtedly be right. Pro Bowlers and all pros and franchise fixtures in this draft. You have, as most people do, Fernando Mendoza going number one to the Raiders. Is he, Matt Miller, in your eyes, the best player or merely the best quarterback? And a quarterback has to go one because the Raiders or anyone else that wants to trade up there need a quarterback.
So he's the second best player for me. He's the number two player okay. on my board behind Jeremiah Love of Notre Dame. And the Raiders need a quarterback. So you have to take him at number one overall. And I think it'll be interesting the next, until April 23rd, the conversation about Fernando Mendoza will be interesting. I'm doing a study right now on him as a historical prospect. Where would he rank in the last 5 years? For me, he's not going to be up there with Caleb Williams. He probably won't be with Jaden Daniels. Maybe he's closer to like a Drake May type grade, but I think that's an important part of the process and the exercise as an evaluator is to see where would this player rank against previous classes so you can kind of put things into context and perspective. But I'm a Fernando Mendoza fan, and I feel I said this on TV a couple weeks ago. I don't think he's getting talked about enough because we've talked about the rise of Indiana and we've talked about the transfer portal and players on that team being 24, 25 years old. Fernando Mendoza did something that only Joe Burrow has done this year, to go undefeated, win a Heisman Trophy, win a national championship, And there's a lot of Burrow-esque play from him in terms of the poise, how much better he plays after he gets hit. You know, there are times this year where he gets rocked and then he has the best game of his life right after that. So I love the accuracy, you know, the quick release, the decision making. Rarely does he make the wrong decision with the ball. So I think there's a lot to love about him. And I'm excited, you know, if the Raiders keep that pick, and I think they should, despite the fact that there's probably going to be a lot of teams trying to get to that spot. I'm excited to see what an offense with Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty and hopefully an improved offensive line would look with Mendoza at the helm.
Yeah, it's dangerous and yet it's fascinating, right? Talking to Matt Miller here from ESPN, because every year we do this, we compare this year's quarterback class to last year's or the year before. You're like, well, he's not Caleb Williams, right? But at the same time, and I don't know what your analogy is, I've heard a lot of people say Matt Ryan or say Jared Goff, and you're like, okay, well, if you could tell me I was getting one of those, I'll happily run the car to the podium right now.
Yeah, that's it. I do think he's like a souped up Jared Goff, you know, a little bit stronger armed, probably a little bit more athletic, but the accuracy, and some people think this is a knock, but Jared Goff he's a conservative quarterback, but, you know, he'll go on heaters where he's unstoppable and he looks like a top five player. And Matt Ryan was the same way. So I think with Mendoza, it's tough to find a comp because, you know, he is 6'4", 225 pounds. He's a big quarterback. He did have 7 rushing touchdowns. He did rush for 444 yards this last year if you take away sacks. But he's not Josh Allen, you know, and he's not Caleb Williams. He's probably a little bit closer to the Goffs and maybe even a little bit closer to a Drake May or CJ Stroud in terms of what type of passer he will be. But it's I think the league is ready for a little bit more of a pocket passer, a little bit of a revival in terms of pocket passers, because we've seen so many players overdrafted on athletic ability, whether that be Kyler Murray or Anthony Richardson, Trey Lance, and they're not panning out because we have forgotten that the most important job for a quarterback is to make the right decision and put the ball where it's supposed to be. Fernando Mendoza does that consistently, makes the right decision, puts the ball where it's supposed to be. I mean, I think he throws the most catchable ball of anyone in college football last year. And that's what fans should get excited about. It's not going to be the 40 times, it's not going to be the arm strength. It's just, oh, wait, this guy's just a really good quarterback. He's a really good player.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Josh Allen went 7th overall in 2018 because everyone wanted to point out what he couldn't do, and he was raw and this and that, and he fell to 7th, and the Bills made the move. Brandon Bead made the move, and he's still living off that right now, obviously, with him there and McDermott out, and he moved up, and he got the guy, and no one debates now that he was ever the guy. So you have Ty Simpson going 2nd round, 44 to the Jets. He's the next quarterback after 1 overall, at least right now in your mock. That is a Cowboys pick from the Quinnen Williams trade. Every year, Matt, we see this. We're now 2 weeks after the season, 10 days after the season, and there's only one quarterback projected. But by the time we get to the third week in April, whether it's at the combine or in make-believe pro days that are going to be televised on TV and people are going to make more out of them than they really should, that the quarterbacks get pushed up, what's the chance in your gut that there is another quarterback on Thursday?
I think it's a good chance. And my colleagues at ESPN keep telling me that I'm the low man on Ty Simpson and that he's going to get pushed up. And he might.
Is it an injury concern? Sorry to cut you off. Is it the rib, the elbow? Is that part of your concern? Or is it the way he faltered down the stretch?
So it's all that. It's the, did you falter because the injury? Did you falter because first 9 games, he's a first round pick. Last 6 games, I wish he'd go back to school. And if you put those two together, for us math majors, you get 15. NFL teams want 25 starts from quarterbacks. He has 15. So there's a lot missing on the resume. And so I think you got to get a room with Ty Simpson and see what he's about and try to understand, are we getting the guy from the first 9 weeks or are we getting the guy from the second 6 weeks? Because two different quarterbacks, and trying to understand, did you slide because of injury? Did you slide because teams defensively got the book on you and understood that you had some struggles, that there were some issues to your game? But you know, there are moments from Ty Simpson where I think he's a good starter, you know, at a minimum, a good starter. He's not the biggest guy. There's probably going to be a lot of Brock Purdy talk, Mac Jones talk when it comes to Ty Simpson, because he's not the biggest, strongest guy, but he is accurate and poised. And his processing speed early in the season, I was like, my goodness, how's this guy? This is 4th game he's ever started. His processing speed is phenomenal. So I think the lack of starts is going to be a bigger conversation than anything when it comes to him. But he is certainly a player that I know I might leave Indianapolis much higher on than I am going in, just because you, once you kind of get the feedback from teams about how comfortable they are with where he's at in the process, that could, you know, kind of ease a lot of my concerns.
I was chuckling there a little bit, not anything you said, but I was going there as well in my head with the processing thing. Just he's a son of a coach, right? You're going to hear this. I know we are. Coach's kid. He's really impressive on the board. Teams met with him. That momentum is going to pick up. But yeah, the injury concern of the lack of starts, Dante Moore, lack of starts. He went back to Oregon. Ty Simpson decided to come out, but there's got to be a second quarterback. And normally that sweet spot is in the 20s. Is it going to be Ty Simpson? Who knows? It might not be. This is an odd draft because there's the quarterbacks we just discussed. There's also, I don't say a dearth of amazing running back talent. Jeremiah loves a blue chipper. You have him top 10 going to the Saints at 8 overall. Your next back isn't until 59. Jadarian Price there to the Texans. Now, like, that kind of gap between backs isn't that surprising. But, Matt, is there a good mid-range running back market in this draft?
I personally don't think it is. I think we're missing that mid-range. And Jadarian Price was Jeremiah Love's backup at Notre Dame. And some of his best players are as a kick returner because he had Jeremiah Love in front of you, right? So I do think that there's a hole. And my hope was that Penn State, Catron Allen, Nicholas Singleton, my hope was that they would elevate this year. My hope was that we would – I like DeMond Claiborne. I like Desmond Reed. Emmett Johnson from Nebraska is probably the number three back in this class. But there's something missing. And I think it's at an unfortunate time, right when teams are starting to value the running back position a little bit again. Coincides really well with a good free agent running back class, though. You know, we're going to see Kenneth Walker III is a free agent. We're going to see Rico Dowdle as a free agent. There's a good free agent running back class out there. Breece Hall, another one, to where those players might fill in some of the gaps of this draft class. But it is, I think it's a year where there's a lot of undersized guys. You're probably looking at players as bit pieces instead of, you know, a guy that can be a starting running back. You're probably looking at, okay, this can be a third down running back for us. This can be a, you know, short yardage running back for us. It's not, other than Jeremiah Love and maybe Jadarian Price, it's not a class where you're saying this is a three down player that we can build around.
All right, last thing for you, Matt. Appreciate the time. You got Caleb Downs at 7 overall. Arvell Reese ahead of him. I mean, most people project both Downs and Reese and then Sonny Styles. Obviously, this is going to be a packed Ohio State first round. Carnell Tate, likely the first wide receiver off the board, although I'm sure there'll be differing opinions as we get to April 23rd. Do you think there is going to be a positional debate about Caleb Downs? I don't say he falls because it's early, right? And what is falling in the draft? We saw that last year with the quarterbacks. Like, what's falling? We talk about it, and then they end up going where they go. But there are teams that are going to go, I think, hey, he's amazing, but do I want a safety in the top 10 when it comes to positional value, salary cap, resource allocation, things like that? What do you say to that conversation?
I say that he might be the best pure football player in this draft, and that if he can be Brian Branch, if he can be a smaller Kyle Hamilton, if he can be Antoine Winfield Jr., there's value in that. And the salary cap argument is the hard part. I would say in this draft that is so devoid of blue chip talent, take the best player available.
That's a great point.
Whether that be a tight end, a running back, a safety, an offensive guard, a linebacker, this draft is full of great players at non-premium positions. And so that is going to be a huge part of the conversation over the next 8 weeks, 10 weeks of how do we value a player like Caleb Downs, who has been an eraser at safety, that Nick Saban loves, that Matt Patricia loves, and that he's excelled in all these different defensive schemes and alignments. How do you weigh that against, you know, maybe we just take a right tackle because it's more positional value, because it's maybe it's more of a need. But then it goes back to, do you pass on a potential all-pro safety just because he's a safety? There's still value in that position, still needed. And there are certainly teams that have a need there. The Kansas City Chiefs are sitting at pick 9. They could absolutely use a player like Caleb Downs if he's on the board. So I think he is one of the more fascinating conversation points in this draft. And interestingly enough, Andrew, there are two other safeties that I have first-round grades on, Emmanuel McNeil Warren from Toledo and Dylan Thinneman from Oregon. So we might see three safeties go in the first round, more safeties than quarterbacks and running backs combined in the first round is absolutely possible.
Yeah, two of them Big Ten guys. Thienemann started at Purdue before transferring to Oregon. Mm-hmm. Caleb Downs obviously started at Alabama before transferring to Ohio State. You saw what Nick Emanwori did as a second-round pick last year. Much different player, obviously. Emanwori is a much bigger guy playing that big nickel, and he's all over the place. But you can have a safety, especially with the kind of defenses teams play, as an integral part in your scheme. And for me, the fact that he was the best player on the field on basically an NFL defense is what Ohio State was fielding. NFL coaching, NFL talent all over that defense. To me, that says something. Now, Reese may go ahead of him. So you're going to go, well, wasn't Reese the better player? I mean, he's the height, weight, speed guy. He's the edge rusher that you could see giving you double-digit sacks, if that's where you play him. But Caleb Downs, everyone agreed. I did a couple of Ohio State games the last few years. He's the best player on the field on that side of the ball. So if that's the case, and we're talking Ohio State here, there's a reason he should be a top 10 pick. There's a reason you should read Matt Miller's mock draft right now on ESPN.com. And the other piece as well, with his 11 first round grades and anything he puts out there on NFL Draft Scout on the Twitter and on the X. Matt, we appreciate you doing this. Travel safely to Indianapolis. I owe you one when I see you, my friend.
Yeah, I'll see you there on Radio Row, I'm sure. And we'll talk some more football when we get there.
Sounds good. Thanks, Matt. All right, fun show. Matt Miller, everybody there from ESPN. I want to thank Nate Tice, Football 301. Listen to him and Charles McDonald, wherever you get your Yahoo podcast. And, of course, you can watch on yahoosports.tv. The entire Yahoo NFL band is going on the road, as mentioned, next week to Indianapolis. We will bring you this show, Inside Coverage, with Jory and Frank and C-Rob and the entire crew from the NFL's Scouting Combine. We hope to talk to you then. Thanks for listening to, thank you for watching, Inside Coverage on Yahoo. So long.